Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Tuesday, March 23rd, 2021. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey there, Melody.
How goes it with you?
Hey, couldn't be a whole lot better, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Perhaps if gold were 2,500, I'd be ecstatic. But you know what? We're in it for the long haul, so we're along for the ride.
And I'll tell you what, one day we're going to be sitting here, we're going to be talking about gold 3,500, and that'll be how fun that will be. You know, but the bad thing is a double-edged sword, or the flip of the coin, or whatever you want to call it, is because when gold gets that high, it's not going to be based on happy things occurring. And that's the downside to gold. I mean, you know, when there's a greed market going on, you do have a lot of people coming into the market, but they're usually going into the more rare coins. And so, and you know, that is a happy place to be when you're going into the numismatic coins. It's a happy place to be because you're buying, you know, coins for what they are. You really don't care what the market does. You're still protecting your purchasing power, converting those dollars into real money, but you also have something of value. You have a work of art. And that is still going to be so very important as we go forward. And we can continue to see a loss of value of our dollar and inflation. And I hear this a lot. Well, who's going to want to buy my coin if I buy those types? Everybody. Everybody. There's always a market for gold. So what if, you know, and I'm talking about the really rare coins, but they also do well. And sure, you have to take it to an auction. It's okay. Because that's where you're going to get the best money. Sure, you can call me up and we can liquidate it on the market. Just like that. There's a buyer for it. But you do get your most money out of it if you went to auction. So rare coins, it's a good thing. And you just have to eliminate all of those naysayers out there who only want you to do this one thing. It's the best thing for you and so forth. Well, you know, you're right. Rare coins are not for everybody, and it's key to know what is suitable for you. But anyway, 800-375-4188. The semi-numismatics are great. You get the protection of the rare coins, the same protection, the same performance, and you also get, privacy. So what more could you ask for in any investment? Tell me what investment gives you privacy, performance, and protection against confiscation, against government. You know? What other investment is there? I can't think of one. 800-375-4188. Dave, gold today. We struggled a little bit. The paper markets were down, but not bad. Gold is down $11 at $17.28. Silver is down 73 cents at $25.10. Platinum is down 16 at $1,171. And palladium was down 14 at 2,665. The U.S. dollar, to be expected, was up 56 points at 92.35, beating oil took down 4.10 at 57.46. I'm guessing that old Jerome Powell was out there yakking away. I know Janet Yellen has been out there yakking away too, so they're trying to get that strong dollar, at least temporarily. But so that's what it is today. Let's go ahead and see what the paper markets did. The Dow was down 319 points, 32,411. The NASDAQ was down 149 points at 13,227. The S&P was down 30 at 3,910. The 10-year yield, 1.73%. You know, and it's pretty much was the same overseas, Asia, and Europe as it was the night before. Japan was down your 2% and so forth. But everything else was fairly quiet, considering all the turmoil that's happening over there. It really is amazing that the European markets are holding up as well as they are with all the riots happening due to, hey, they don't want to be locked down anymore. So they're saying, And it's amazing how France is even saying, I mean, it's just a very small percentage. They don't want those vaccines. They're there. Not us. And so, yes, there's problems over there. So Chicago Fed's National Activity Index today showed that the U.S. economy last month at a below trend growth. And now this is the first time since April, in fact, it suggested a decline. In the midst of the bullishness from economists, from your CEOs, from money managers about the 2021's expected breakout growth, the first quarter has been pretty bad based on hard data. U.S. retail sales, they shrank 3% last month. Industrial production and capacity utilization, say that three times, dropped 4.2%, with manufacturing output down 3.1% and mining production 5.4% lower. Now, the non-farm payrolls report showed 380,000 jobs added, but little change in the big picture trend from December and January's weak numbers, Dave.
Yeah. Now, you know, the Chicago Fed's index tries to answer the question: is the economy growing at a rate faster than its potential, or slower? Uses a weighted average of 85 existing monthly indicators of U.S. economic activity. The index is composed of four broad categories of data: production and income, employment, unemployment and hours worked, and personal consumption and housing, and sales orders and inventories. It's built to have an average value of zero with a standard deviation of one. Now, economists say that February's decline was not an aberration. The index saw negative readings for production as well as personal consumption and housing, and all four categories decreased from January. The index 3-month moving average also turned negative last month. So that all does suggest a downturn. We will see in the coming months.
Well, you know, Powell is warning, Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, he's warning that the economy recovery is far from complete. And as we saw, the U.S. Treasury yields go a little bit lower, or they basically stabilized. And following the prepared comments from Powell at a congressional hearing where he warned that the economy recovery is far from complete. So recovery, Dave? Do we know of a recovery? The yield on the benchmark 10-year Treasury note fell to 1.64% shortly before 1 o'clock Eastern time, while the yield on the 30-year Treasury bond dipped to 2.3%. And we saw the 10-year yield trade as low as 1.62 earlier in the session. As I mentioned, you had both Powell and Janet Yellen making their first joint appearance in front of the House Committee on Financial Services today. And Powell said that the economic recovery from the pandemic had progressed more quickly than generally expected. Looks to be strengthening, but yet he says it is far from over. Still remains weak, and the unemployment rate underestimates the shortfall. And, you know, it goes on and on and on and on, Dave. And anything just to keep everybody happy.
Well, speaking of that, the Fed's about to expand its attention, which is one of those oxymorons when it comes to the Fed. Expanded attention or attention span. Ooh. Having a hard enough time with its two legislatively mandated goals, unemployment and stable prices. The Fed's going to turn its attention toward climate risks now.
Oh, Lord.
It's created a Financial Stability Climate Committee and a Supervision Climate Committee. Now, this is according to Fed Governor Lyle Brainard, who added that the potential for complex interactions across the financial system is what these panels will focus on. And I thought that was the whole reason for being of the Federal Reserve, Melody. So it's going to be interesting to see if this takes on a life of its own, or if it's just going to, say, be another feature or factor that they'll build existing metrics around. So it's going to be interesting. Like, I know the CBO years ago, back in the 90s, I believe it was after I left, added a new criterion in their cost estimates of legislation to add the impact of any proposed legislation on state and local governments, which hadn't up to that point been reflected. So does this mean that, or does it mean an added stress on its already limited attention span, or difficulty with dealing with just two of its main mandates? I don't know.
Well, I mean, what's the Fed's business worrying about climate change? I mean,
well, they would probably
argue.
They would probably argue, in their way of thinking, that it's everybody's responsibility.
So they're just
taking what's in front of them, to make sure that, say, what decisions they make in the future don't negatively impact the climate. I'm speculating because I really don't know.
It's I'm kind of speechless.
I get that.
I mean, we have bad weather, and we have storms. And they've always been able to weather through the storms just perfectly fine. So, but to bring climate change as part as their criteria to determine monetary policy, that's what they're talking about, or am I off the page?
Well, I don't know. You know, that, and I think that's the crux of the question is, does this represent a far-reaching decision, or are we, at least initially on the face of it, making more of it than they intend it to be? I guess we're just going to have to pay attention to future statements coming out of FOMC meetings how much Powell mentions climate change in future press conferences, and then we'll have a better idea.
Yeah, but it's just amazing how you know with this administration that the only two things that are important in this whole country is climate change and racism. That's all they took. I mean, it's just like, no, there's a little bit more. I mean, it's bizarre. But anyway, so now the Fed's getting involved. It doesn't even make sense. But anyway, let's go ahead and move on. We did talk a little bit about this yesterday, Dave, about the $3 to $4 trillion infrastructure. And it's just interesting to see how it gets paid. But hey, while we're printing the money, we may as well just keep on printing it. And This is right after the $1.9 trillion relief package just this month. It didn't waste any time. Start doing a $3 to $4 trillion. And again, it's supposed to build back better agenda coming from this administration. And it just reminds me of the same similar thing, the road to recovery after 2008 in the Obama administration, where, you know, what really got done, and talking from people who actually worked on the bridges and so forth, like, we didn't do anything. We just kind of slapped on a new coat of paint and looked like we were busy. Yeah, we've, you know, spruced up that cement a little bit to make it look like it was all done, but, you know, we really didn't do it, and we stood there and got paid for it, and I think it's going to be something very similar. But anyway, so yeah, $3 to $4 trillion package. It all comes with tax increases. And yeah, I get they say major corporations and wealthy benefits or wealthy individuals. But, you know, Dave, you know, it's just it filters down. Everybody pays. Everybody. Well, hardworking people pay, Dave.
Well, I guess we'll see, won't we, how this all pans out. There are a couple of interesting questions in my mind as discussion about infrastructure comes to the front of the congressional agenda. One of them is, of course, how big of a package will it be? I mean, you've got at least two camps right now. One is pushing moderation. These are Democrats now who are pushing more moderation, largely out of the hope they can get some Republican support in both houses, but primarily the Senate, where it's likely to be necessary because they're going to have to get 60 votes, which means 10 Republican votes, unless they somehow finagle a way to get it considered through the reconciliation process again, like the $1.9 trillion stimulus package. But and then you have the other camp, which is saying, like they did here, you know, we haven't done infrastructure since whenever, I mean, since the Great Recession. If you, you know, I forget the amount of that. It was in the hundreds of billions of dollars. And before that, you had the Eisenhower administration building interstate highways. So we're due. You hope whatever they do, that they do it right, not necessarily bigger or little.
Yeah, but we weren't, you know, $30 trillion in debt. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. It's time for our weekly segment, Levity is Golden. Dave, what are we talking about today?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, in a departure from our normal chillax mantra, this week's Levity is Golden is, I guess, anything but what you'd call lighthearted, but it is informative and possibly even interesting for our data-hungry listeners. In a recent study, too big to fail Goldman Sachs economists Jan Hatzius and Sven-Jari Sten make the case for Goldman's Financial Conditions Index to show how Fed monetary policy decisions affect economic conditions. Now, we learn in Econ 101 that the effect of the short-term interest rate on GDP, known as the IS curve, is a central relationship in standard macroeconomic models. The IS curve is part of the ISLM model. It's a two-dimensional tool that shows the relationship between interest rates and asset markets. Intersection of the investment saving or IS curve and the liquidity monetary supply LM curve models, general equilibrium or supposed simultaneous balance occurs in both the goods and the asset markets. Phew! Glad I kept my macro textbook from my grad school days to get through that one, Melody.
Could you repeat that, please?
No, thank you. But the study shows, the Goldman study shows, that the IS curve for the U.S. has broken down over the past few decades. And that breakdown, the authors say, provides a natural motivation for considering. Oops. Excuse me one second.
What's the matter? We can't have.
No, I'm good. I thought I was losing my internet connection. The Goldman Index is a weighted average of riskless interest rates, the exchange rate, equity valuations, and credit spreads, with weights that correspond to the direct impact of each variable on GDP. Now, Hatzius and Sten say we can decompose the IS curve into the response of GDP to the FCI, which is the index, and the response of the FCI to the Fed funds rate. Why is this even important, ladies and gentlemen, you may ask? Well, it turns out that the FCI changes remain highly significant predictors of real GDP changes. You know, the study shows that monetary policy innovations of the Fed, I mean, these are measured as changes in treasury yields in one-hour windows after FOMC announcements, remain highly significant predictors of FCI changes. In other words, Fed officials can influence economic conditions via monetary policy innovations, even though they can't control it just by setting a path for the Fed funds rate. Now, that's according to these authors. There's a whole lot else that we could talk about it, but, you know, I'm going to stop there, Melody, and just say if anyone is interested in this technical study, which for policy wonks, like some of our listeners are, particularly with economics and, you know, the leading indicators. You can read the entire study on our Facebook page, which is at DGS Coins. That's at the at sign DGS Coins. And that, Melody, is this week's Not So Levity is Golden.
Yes, you got that one right. But this seems very interesting. And you know what? It's, I think everybody knows my view on the Fed and everything like that, but, and you know, the beginning, the history of the Fed, who controls us and so forth, but it still dictates what happens.
Yep.
And it helps to follow, whether you agree with it or not. It does help to follow because it does give you a window. And you know, if you get past all the propaganda that comes from them, you can kind of see, you know, what they're going to do and what they're doing. And most of the time it's not good, but they do dictate. And for those who have financial investments, you ought to know this stuff instead of making your financial planner do it all. So anyway, actually, you should get out of paper. You wouldn't have to worry about it all. Put it into gold. Put away your savings account. You would never have to look at the stock market again. But anyway, there was one thing I wanted to say to that, and I said everything but what I wanted to say. But okay, I don't know if we want to go. We've talked a lot about the Fed.
Now this one's interesting.
It is interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's new news.
It's new news. All right. Well, we know that since about December 2007, the Fed's been shoveling trillions of dollars into the coffers of the trading houses that are owned by these banks, holding companies, almost on a nonstop basis. And that's especially so if you include the quantitative easings of 1, 2, 3, 4, the repo loan bailout, the QE. Did we really stop at 4 on the QE? I don't know. But this all began in September of 2019, months before there was any government declared financial crisis that was due to the pandemic. So as of last Wednesday, the Fed's balance sheet climbed to $7.7 trillion from $959 billion in September of 2008. Now, the Wednesday before Wall Street blew itself up along with the U.S. economy as a result of a lax Fed oversight. And the Fed can't blame that $7.7 trillion on the pandemic because its balance sheet stood at $4.2 trillion in December of 2019. And again, before there was any pandemic in the U.S. Given the Fed's history, one might think that Congress would be demanding transparency.
Mm-hmm.
Now that really is a joke, but anyway, transparency from the Fed, you know, on behalf of you and me. But of course, we all know that wouldn't be the case. So while the Fed has released monthly reports showing the names of recipients under some of the bailout programs, the Fed has refused to provide the names of the Wall Street loan recipients under the following four programs: the repo loan bailouts, the primary dealer credit facility, the commercial paper funding facility, and the money market mutual fund liquidity facility. Now, the financial statements released yesterday by the Fed did nothing to shed any light on which Wall Street trading firms were in such dire liquidity straits that they needed billions of dollars from the Fed on a daily basis in the fall of 2019 and most of 2020. What we did learn is that one day last year, the Fed's agent, the New York Fed, had lent out $495 billion under its repurchase agreement loan program versus an average daily amount of $97 billion. What we also know is that the only entities that are eligible to borrow that repo money are the Fed's 24 primary dealers. And of course, it includes the security units of the Too big to fail banks, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Bank of America, Dave.
Yeah, and then the primary dealers also include U.S.-based security units of foreign banks like Deutsche Bank, Credit Suisse, Societe Generale. And look, the American people have a right to know if the five-count felon J.P. Morgan Chase is getting money from the Fed, whether it's $10 or as it turns out, more than a trillion, or if Citigroup, which secretly received over $2.5 trillion in cumulative loans from the Fed during the Great Recession and its aftermath, is on the dole again, or if troubled, corrupt foreign banks like Deutsche Bank that are counties counterparties to Wall Street's unreformed derivatives are back to getting secret handouts from the Fed as they were in 2008. American people also have a right to the details of financial dealings between the Fed and Wall Street banks that make the case that the Fed is a captured regulator of these sprawling global banks that so convincingly demonstrated their ability to bring the U.S. economy, heck, the world economies, to their knees during the Great Recession. I mean, the program that the Fed used in 2007 to 2010 to secretly funnel a cumulative $9 trillion in below-market loans was called the Primary Dealer Credit Facility. And that's the same name the Fed's using for today's secret program. The Independent Government Accountability Office conducted an audit of the Fed's lending programs back then and released the results in 2011, which we've mentioned from time to time. The GAO named companies such as Citigroup secretly borrowing $2 trillion, Morgan Stanley $1.9 trillion, Merrill Lynch $1.8 trillion, Bank of America $975 billion, and Bear Stearns, should say the late Bear Stearns, $851 billion. Now, Powell and Yellen are appearing before the House Financial Services Committee as we speak, answering questions on the Fed's current emergency lending facilities. Well, we're not expecting to learn anything helpful about where the Fed money went under these four opaque lending programs, But here's a call to action, ladies and gentlemen. If you believe American citizens deserve transparency on Wall Street bailouts, please call your members of the House and Senate today and demand to know the names of the recipients of these bailout programs, which, yes, are funded by the American people. Melody.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, when you just think of the trillions and trillions of dollars, and, you know, we get caught up on the $1.9 trillion, you know, the stimulus, and, you know, we don't go back to see what the Fed is really doing and, you know, and how it's helping all these, you know, banks and foreign banks and, you know, just to, you know, we've been the bank, the taxpayers have been the banks to the world. I mean, you know, we're just not taxpayers for the United States anymore. No, we're taxpayers for the world. And so much of our money goes to so many through the Federal Reserve and so forth. So, you know, it is. And you know what, Dave, I've been getting a lot of talk like about the digital currency last August, you know. Fed government Brainard gave a speech where she opened up on a topic of possible U.S. central bank digital currency, CBDC for short. She stated, like other central banks, we're continuing to assess the opportunities and challenges of, as well as for the use cases for digital currency as a complement to cash and other payment options. And, you know, she unveiled that the Boston Fed was partnering with with MIT to jointly build and test a hypothetical digital currency for general, you know, and, you know, the story has taken off. And, you know, it is, you know, pretty much you hear a lot of discussions from various central banks that are working on some sort of a program so that they can offer some sort of a central bank digital currency. And I don't know. It's kind of interesting, Dave. And I don't know this concept, the CBDC, comes with a lot of questions around the value, implementation, considerations. And how does this, you know, I guess the question is, how does the CBDC differ from other forms of cryptocurrency? If it's being backed by a central bank, I made the statement yesterday, I don't think they would just usher in any type of a digital currency unless there was some sort of a reason to. If there wasn't some sort of a, you know, collapse, they're just not going to come in and say, you know, here's your digital currency, you know, and so forth. But how does it differ from other forms of cryptocurrency, Dave?
Well, first, they would argue that this is not a crypto currency, simply because it's backed by a central bank, whereas cryptos, I'm not pro or con here at the moment. I'm just explaining. But here, a CBDC would be a liability of the Fed, whereas commercial bank money, monies that we keep in a bank, in an account, is the liability of the individual bank. But because it's backed by a central bank, observers say it would be more stable than a market-based cryptocurrency. And there's a lot going on here beneath the surface, and a lot of it, I have to say, seems like noise. You know, the big question here, and I think the big reason why we may see a move, the U.S. will not take the lead in this, I don't believe. But I do think that as other countries, especially larger industrial companies in countries like Europe, the EU, China, and others, as they move ahead with their own, or if they do, the U.S. is going to feel compelled to avoid risking the status of the dollar as the world reserve currency.
A direct threat.
Yes.
To that position.
That's what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. Don't think it's anything else.
We'll be right back, because we are heading into a break. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Dave?
Well, we let's see. What do we want to? Where do we want to go? I think. Well, we have a new newsletter that's out. Got an insightful article. If usually longer from our friend Doug Nolan at the Credit Bubble Bulletin. Wendy Wilson is on a week's hiatus, but she'll return next week with her column. And I have an article in there about the havoc that the Fed and other central banks around the world are wreaking. As listeners know, you can subscribe to our free weekly newsletters and blogs on our website at dgscoins.com. That's dgscoins.com. Or you can read them on our Facebook page, again, at @DGScoins, one word, at DGS. So, yes, Melody, the Fed and other central banks wreaking havoc around the world. As a result, one nation's bond yields are at risk of rising further, some say. Another nation, half a world away, seals the end of its central bank's independence. Now, here in the U.S., the Fed decided last Friday against extending a 2020 rule that relaxed the amount of capital that banks have to maintain against treasuries and other holdings, all as the pandemic got into full swing. As we reported the other week, the Fed announced last April a temporary change, i.e. until March 31st this year, to its supplementary leverage ratio. Now, that change excluded treasuries and deposits at Federal Reserve banks from the calculation of bank holding companies' required capital. Ratio, SLR for short, requires large banks to hold capital equal to about 3% of their assets. The required ratio is 5% for banks that are deemed most important to the overall financial system, i.e. The too big to fails like Citibank, JP Morgan, Chase, Goldman Sachs, etc. The SLR generally applies to financial institutions with more than $250 billion in total consolidated assets.
Well, you know, Dave, the relaxation of the SLR requirement supposedly was to ease strains in the treasury market that resulted from the coronavirus and increase banking organizations' ability to provide credit to households and businesses.
Yeah, it temporarily decreased the so-called Tier 1 capital requirements of holding companies by approximately 2 percentage points in the aggregate. Now, that decision to relax capital requirements last April has been widely viewed by mainstream economists as key to calming what had been unusually volatile treasury markets in the early days of the pandemic. You know, the widespread need for cash had caused a massive sell-off in the bond market that the Fed helped to cover, or tried to cover, I should say, through its massive liquidity programs. At the time, the Fed pointed out that liquidity conditions in treasury markets have deteriorated rapidly, and financial institutions are receiving significant inflows of customer deposits, along with increased reserve levels. So, the regulatory restrictions that accompany this balance sheet growth, now that's again the Fed talking last April, may constrain the firm's ability to continue to serve as financial intermediaries and to provide credit to households and businesses.
Well, you know, we're...
Go ahead.
Well, now we're 1 year later, and the decision to not extend the restriction is a move that many say could upset Wall Street and further upend this already roiling bond market.
Yeah, upset Wall Street. Yeah. Pity the fools, the banks and other equities. Well, you know, analysts believe the affected banks will have to hold more capital against treasury bonds and other deposits that they maintain at the Fed, thus lowering demand for treasuries and other government agency notes, further increasing yields. Fed officials say they'll be looking for public input on how to adjust the SLR in the future, especially at a time when reserves are running at historic highs, but they decided to let the exemption expire now anyway, as previously planned. By the way, Wall Street had been lobbying heavily for an extension of the exemption as banks have been flooded with deposits that require them to hold offsetting capital as collateral against this customer money.
Well, Wall Street was worrying that in deciding not to extend the SLR break, that the Fed risks a further rise in interest rates, you know, as banks might decide to sell some of their treasury holdings so they don't have to maintain the reserve requirements.
Yeah, but Fed officials say the treasury market has been stabilized. It could have fooled me. And Friday's decision shouldn't affect that. Besides, the Fed says banks are still well capitalized even without the exception. And they don't believe banks will need to sell their treasuries to meet reserve required. But they extended it anyway, right? The largest of the two big-to-fail banks have about $1 trillion in capital. Thus, Fed officials say repealing the SLR relief will adjust those levels only marginally. However, some other Fed officials do worry that relaxing the ratio much longer might encourage banks to load up on risky assets like junk bonds and more derivatives, which carry the same weight against reserve requirements as safer assets.
We mentioned this briefly, but the Turkish lira fell by more than 15% against the dollar yesterday. It reached almost 8.5 lira per dollar after President Erdogan fired yet another central bank governor over the weekend.
I know. Ex-governor Nasi Agbal was relieved of his duty after a surprise 200 basis point increase of Turkey's interest rates last week. I know, as part of an effort to restore the credibility of the country's monetary policy and, yes, bring down inflation. Currency
what
and strength.
What's happening to the people?
Which ones? The decision makers or the consumers?
The citizens. I mean, you know, here you have this going on, and I don't know if you could make a direct comparison to, you know, when we go towards that degree or so forth. But, I mean, what's happening to them? I mean,
they're certainly paying more for products. You know, it's bad for the consumer. Although, you know, you might argue that the intentions were good. I don't follow Turkey as that closely, so I don't know some of the, you know, the backstories. But we do know that, you know, a lot of politics at play. We know that, you know, Turkey's Minister of Finance and Treasury, who was Erdogan's son-in-law, announced more recently that he would step down to spend more time with his family. Now, you know, when that happens, it's usually because the father-in-law ruler doesn't want to embarrass him publicly, or his daughter, or himself. So, you know, a lot of politics at play there. And now, you know, just this guy, Murat, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Usaw, who's a central bank governor, who is has just replaced a former one who was known as more credible in the eyes of the market. This guy Usaw is seen as an Erdogan puppet. So, you know, analysts who follow Turkey and foreign exchange more closely says the shocking firing of central bank chief Akbal over the weekend may deal a fatal blow to investor confidence in Turkey, which has snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. Another one said it doesn't matter who his replacement is or what they say, because it's now clear that Erdogan's running the show. So, you know, whether or not it's an independent central bank or a bank that's under the influence of a ruler, a more authoritarian figure like Erdogan, either way, it still comes down to the decisions that they make. And more than that, comes down to the fact that they're dealing with another fiat currency. You know, you can't be surprised by surging inflation when it does happen. And when your currency, particularly another country's currency, goes weak against US dollar.
Well, I think this is kind of interesting. I mean, I never heard of Zoom prior to last year.
I don't think any of us did.
I don't think any of us did. And now it's... A year ago, I didn't know what Zoom was, but now I think there's not one of us who probably hasn't used it. I've used it multiple times. And the company, you know, for the past year has become one of the biggest beneficiaries of all the lockdowns and people staying at home and so forth. And the video conferencing platform, they raked in $664 million in pre-tax profits just in the U.S. alone during its last fiscal year, and which that ended in January, over 40 times more than $16.3 million earned the previous year. I'm glad there was Zoom. I mean, it was successful, and by all rights, I'm glad they made lots of money. Mm-hmm. You know, it kept people employed and so forth. So, yeah, kudos. It's great to see someone be rewarded for providing a service. But here comes the big BUT. The company paid $0 in federal income taxes on those profits. Now, this was disclosed on Friday in a filing with the SEC. And even though the corporate tax rate was 21% for 2020, a Zoom spokesperson told Insider in a statement, the company complies with all applicable tax laws in countries where it does business. Further, it has invested heavily in research and development activities to build and enhance its communications technology development activity that is specifically encouraged under current laws, but research and development credits accounted for just 1% of Zoom's tax bill reductions, Dave.
Yeah, now around 99% of its savings supposedly were a result of paying executives $302 million in stock-based compensation compared to just $32 million the year before. Zoom paid just $5.7 million total in taxes last year for an effective tax rate of 0.8%. But $3.9 million of that $5.7 was paid on the company's $14 million in foreign profits for an effective rate of around 28%. And that's highlighting major discrepancies in how the U.S. tax system treats corporations, especially multinationals. Zoom's legal use of stock payments to executives to reduce its tax bill reignited criticism for lawmakers and advocates who want to close loopholes that allow massive profitable corporations to pay less in taxes than millions of individual Americans. One popular U.S., or I should say one well-known U.S. senator noted, if you paid $14.99 a month for a Zoom Pro membership last year, you paid more to Zoom all year than it paid in federal income taxes. So he says it's time to end a rigged tax code that benefits the wealthy and the powerful. Oh, my, Melody.
Yeah, I know. You know what it is? They do need to change the tax laws, but it can't be targeted because companies are rich. And,
it can be targeted because rich companies pay no taxes.
Because they pay no taxes.
Yeah.
And I agree. And it's like, it really is unfair. Is it going to hurt jobs? Will they pull out and go elsewhere? I don't think so.
Yeah.
They've already done the leaving. Anyway, we got to leave. We're out of time. Yeah, I know. Please join us tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.